Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Talking Product. I'm John Young.
And I'm Colin Lyons.
And where we left it off in our last session was Colin and I were doing a little role play with a project that was, it was a relatively large project, but also had some complexity in it, in that it had multiple data feeds. It went into some form of a data platform or a data warehouse, what we call it, I just called it a data management layer. And then there was some functionality on top of that for a variety of users. Now, I don't know if this session is going to work as a standalone session or if you will be best served by going back to the session 5 and listening to that first. More than welcome to join us on this journey here, but I just want to give you a heads up on that. A core thing that I wanted to try and unpack with Colin is what I'm framing as three forces at play that I feel are sort of always at play in delivery. And that's the model of the way of working, what Colin and I have been talking about in terms of the mental models that are brought to bear on delivery, the power dynamics that are also at play. Power can be used to shape the narrative. Power can be used to sometimes withhold information. And then also power or one's authority can be used to minimize or dismiss concerns. And the third dynamic is, I framed it as groupthink. That might be too strong a term. It's how much are you going to be able to question, or are you going to be willing to ask questions? Versus how much are you kind of going to go with the flow or conform? So what we want to do is we want to keep going. We want to keep unpacking this dynamic within the context of an actual, well, it's a made-up project, but I think it's, Colin, I think this project is pretty real world enough, yeah?
It definitely echoes things I've seen in my career multiple times.
and it's the same for me, multiple times. Colin, anything you want to add?
Yeah, by reiterating those different components at play, the power, different mental models, and the dynamics, group dynamics, I think it just frames for someone listening coming in just in this episode or has listened to the last one, that when we're talking about agile, it's very easy to get stuck in the simple ideas around what agile is. Mm. And what you've done is opened up people to think about the bigger elements at play. And I think that's really helpful for people listening into this, is to see that it's not about your stand-ups and your backlogs and your, you know, those things matter, but there's something much, much bigger at play when an organization wants to work in this way.
Yeah. Take that just a little further. Let's just use that as our springboard.
Well, I think that the scenario you've set up starts to show that there's real money at play here, right? That we're talking millions and millions of dollars or pounds for these projects. And therefore, it's not so simple as, are we using the Agile toolkit? It's about people with a lot of influence and a lot to lose trying to navigate getting something really big done. And it's very likely that when people are put in the positions to try to drive these kind of programs, that they're going to capitalize on what assets they have. And by that, I mean what they already know and the power they have to push what they already know forward. So I think that there's a really interesting tension and dynamic that we're really talking about here, which is to get an organization to work in an agile way, you cannot ignore these much bigger things that are at play.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't just go running in waving the manifesto or the scrum guide.
Right.
So here's the scenario. Colin's in a room. Colin's a delivery manager. He has a portfolio of projects, and his colleagues are also delivery managers. They're delivery managers, but they also are responsible for the operations of these products. So it's both a delivery function and it's, there's some customer service as well for the users that are their active users. He doesn't just throw his stuff over the fence. Mm-hmm. Colin has a boss. That boss is in the room. In this, we started with this scenario of a meeting. So that's what I mean by the room. Colin's boss is responsible for this collection of portfolios. And what is happening is a consultant, and that was yours truly here, was presenting this Project Alpha, and just going through a few slides to give everyone an overview of it. Now, Colin himself is not liable for the delivery of this project. The consulting firm is going to deliver it. They will have some assistance from the company that Colin's a part of on that team, but it's largely the consulting firm. And a couple other things. Colin's boss did not bring in the consulting firm. It was brought in by another group. But the customers that Colin's boss serves are going to be getting some of the features, the outcomes and the reporting, the functionality will be delivered to some of the customers that Colin's boss and Colin, serves. So it's working with their group to make sure that there's a successful delivery to their customers. And also, one added thing that we talked about last session is that, Colin is the most experienced agile practitioner on the team, and he is looked at by his boss as, hey, Colin, just keep me honest here that we are really using the right practices and principles for these projects. Colin's boss looks to him to, raise his hand if Colin smells something that smells a little funky. Colin, anything on that one?
Nope, that's a good setup. That's the scenario we're playing with.
So, for those of you that listened to session 5, Colin blew the whole thing up by slide 2. Now, outside of the session, one thing that Colin highlighted to me is that he probably would not have done that in the meeting room. And I felt Colin was being quite polite, quite diplomatic. I definitely pressed it. which was intentional, because I said part of this exercise is we've got to pick out, Colin, what's going in your mind? What's going in your mind? What flags are starting to get raised and why? Let's talk about now, in a real world scenario, you wouldn't have gone as far as I kind of pushed. So what would you have done? And then I'd like to try and role play and pick that apart.
Yeah, so in the role play in the last session, I guess I went a little bit further. I a lot of the things I was trying to do was give some positive feedback on things I thought that were good. So having a deadline, I think, is a good thing. Having a 6-month plan or a plan to release something in 6 months, I think, is a good thing. And I was doing that because I don't want to create so much of agitation that I become ignored. So to be honest with you, what I probably would have done in that session is maybe raise some of those questions or just to try, maybe feel them out a little bit at first. And then once I realized that we weren't going to I wasn't going to hear the kind of things I was looking to hear to reassure me that this was going to be done in a better way, I would probably try to find a person outside the room who is accountable for the outcome of this program of work. Because that's who I have to influence. I don't think I'm going to get much, have much impact in a public forum with a consultant who is there trying to present themselves as experts and so on. So to save face, I wouldn't really allow them, I wouldn't put them in that position to have to battle against me in that way. But I would you know, in a private conversation with someone who was accountable for them, for their work and the outcome of their work, really push, because the scenario there, you know, the reason why I was able to, or not able to, but the reason why we got stuck on slide two is because it was that early in the process that they revealed that by using the word agile doesn't mean they're working in an agile way. So if this were a real scenario, I would get that clear in a diplomatic way and then go speak to somebody who had accountability and try to help them understand the risk that was inherent in that plan.
And let's talk about those risks, because I really liked you used the term latent assumptions. And at one point you asked the question, how can the program be structured to reveal these assumptions? Because your issue wasn't with the word agile.
True.
Your issue is that the program is not designed to reveal assumptions early.
Exactly. Yeah. So just to kind of elaborate on that point, when we come up with a plan, any plan, at the beginning is when we have the least amount of knowledge about what's true. We have ideas of what we think is true, mm-hmm. and we may even have mm-hmm. inputs of things that people also think is true, but we don't know what's true. And the way to find that out is to start making something. Now, it's very easy when speaking about working in this way to be mostly concerned about what's true for the user. In other words, what are their actual needs? What's actually going to benefit them? What do they get prepared to pay for if it's that kind of scenario? But I also think when you have some of these really large projects that are dependent on integration and data, that there are a lot of gremlins that are sitting waiting to be found out. And the best way to find those out is to start doing something for real. So in this particular scenario, which is not unique, but it is a specific scenario, what I would want to see and what I'd want to raise to whoever is accountable for the outcome of this is when do we find out that we're either right, but most likely wrong about a lot of things that relates to data and integration? And another element of that is, what data do we actually need? So often these programs set out with a architectural diagram that shows all these different sources where the data is going to come from and how it's going to be brought together and so on. But there's very little analysis of what we actually need and when do we need it. So to put this in a little bit more concrete terms, let's assume that in this scenario, there are 40 different sources of data that they need to access to be able to generate this data warehouse. And that could actually be quite a low number for some scenarios. Some scenarios, it could be in the hundreds. The quality of the data that resides in those systems and what needs to connect and how they're going to connect is a really complex problem. And is often assumed to be solvable through by drawing diagrams and saying, here are the indexing data that sits in this one, and this is how we're going to map it to that one, and so on and so forth. But the truth is, none of that is known in any reality until you actually go and try to make this thing happen. So in the spirit of trying to unearth assumptions, which you might also call gremlins, my recommendation would be try to make something real that's tangible to the user, but try to make it happen for real. What is the thing that you can pull from whatever data sources you need to create some value that would be visible to a user, and do that from right all the way through all the systems that are required to make that happen? Now, some people would say it's a tremendous amount of force required to make that tiny thing happen. Why wouldn't you get all the data you need to make while you're starting to move with that kind of force? And the reason why you don't want to do that is because you will inevitably carry assumptions that are wrong that you'll find out at a mass scale, and you'll find out late. So to counteract that, you say, let's try to do one small thing end to end, and see what we learn through the process of trying to do that. And then use that to inform what you do next.
Okay. I want you to place yourself in the, wherever, it's a coffee, in the meeting room with the person who brought the consulting team in. And you've just said what you've said. Okay?
Yeah.
Think out loud. How are they responding?
It depends on the person. I think there's some people who don't want to hear what I'm saying because there's so much momentum behind what's come to the point where that consultant's presenting a plan and they just can't bear the idea of having to go back and have them rethink it. That's a certain kind of person. They're the kind of person, I think, who is much more into presenting an appearance of progress and success rather than the actual outcomes being successful. And that we know those people exist. However, if it's a person who genuinely cares or has a lot to lose by it not going well, I think their response would be, oh, never thought of it that way. And why didn't the consultant raise that to me as an approach? And starting maybe perhaps to question, where have you seen it done the way you're talking about? And is this going to cost more money? And, you know, those sorts of things, I think the thoughts are going to run through the head of somebody who actually is interested, but might be a little taken aback by hearing something so radically different.
I'm thinking to myself, it'd be a lucky day if you had that person. here's a couple things. One, that person is probably pretty busy. The thing that I hear them saying is, Colin, even let's just take someone who really is interested. Colin, are you asking me to run the project? I mean, that's why I brought in an expert group. They've done this before elsewhere.
No. So what I'm asking you to do is consider, do you feel at ease with the risk that they're carrying, given the approach that we've just spoken about?
How is that person seeing those risks?
So the risks that I want them to see is, if you go down the path that the consultants presented, and it turns out that the risks I'm talking about manifest, what happens then? What happens when you're at month 8 and find out that there is a tremendous amount of work that no one realized needed doing? And the reason they didn't realize it is because they made these assumptions that everything was going to be fine. And they didn't find them out until month 8, when they could have found them out in month 1.
What's the action that you're hoping they take? And the reason, and I'm asking this because let's imagine our listeners, you know, is that person. Or one of our listeners is you or me, right? We play, you know, in this either a development manager lead or delivery manager lead, a coach role, transformation lead kind of thing. So what's the action that you're hoping that person will take?
I think the first thing I want is an illumination in their mind that there is a different way that would be that would lower the risk. That's the first thing I want. And that's not really an action, but it's like, that's my intention, is how do I get them to say, right, there is a better way, and the way that we're going is risky.
Man, just before you go, dude, but that is such a huge leap. Sorry, I whispered that. That is such a big leap.
Yeah. I mean, I think the people, I guess it's people like you who've been doing this for a long time and have gravitas when you talk about it, and people like me who've done this for a long time, that we hope we can have the impact on someone like that, right? That's, you know, if we hope that our language, our reference points, our experience will translate into, I need to listen to what this guy's saying, because what he's saying doesn't not really fit with what I'm hearing, but there's something in this to me. I can hear something. That's what I'm hoping for.
Okay.
And then hoping that, you know, I've ignited something of concern.
Concern, yeah.
Then I want them to find a way, so whether that's through someone like me or through their own conversations or by challenging, but find a way to get that consultancy to rethink the plan so that...
Totally rethink.
Totally rethink, because that's what it requires, right? The plan is set in one way and it's built with a mental model that is in conflict with what we're talking about.
Can't the consulting firm throw that back at you and say, well, who do you want to run this program, Colin or us?
They can. And I would say, if you're being paid to run this program, you should run the program, but you should run the program in a way that doesn't put our business at risk.
Even if I've been, you know, I've had exposure to a more incremental, iterative way of working, this contemporary, agile thing. Am I going to ask a company that I've brought in to change their ways of working? And especially when they're saying that they're actually doing it using agile ways of working. I'm not so, I couldn't.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think I like that we're exploring this because it, again, it's going to take courage. And does that person have it?
Mm. Well, I don't think this person who's brought the group in has a solid ground to stand on yet to make a to make a real argument.
Yeah.
It's too abstract for them.
I think the argument they could make is, I want to see incremental progress.
Mm. Okay. Okay. But consultant says, we have the milestones. Colin says,
what I want to see is working
beautiful
software incrementally on a frequent basis.
You know, the fun thing about doing this podcast is like Colin and I do not practice this. exactly. It's working software, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's metric that you're using to assess the risk of a project.
Yeah.
If this
person who's accountable for this delivery doesn't understand all that mumbo jumbo, but does acknowledge that seeing working software would be a good thing, then they're in a good place.
Yeah, the person who's brought them in.
Yeah. If they acknowledge themselves, you know what? I don't understand this agile thing you're talking about, but I do think seeing something bit by bit working is a better thing than not seeing it for a long time and hoping it's working. That, I think, is something that, you know, if it's still a jump, but maybe it's not such a far jump.
Okay, so they send an email to the firm. Can you meet with Colin, please? I think he's got some valid points. You know, I do think it would be helpful if we didn't have such a black box delivery. Could you guys work together how we could get just a few, you know, more, you know, functional drops within that 6-month period that you proposed? Something like that. That'd be a win, wouldn't it?
That would be a big step in the right direction.
Not totally like comfortable yet, but it's a step.
Correct. And if that consultancy responded in a way that was sympathetic to that request, then there might be a way to even go further in the conversation with them.
Okay.
So you might say, okay, let's get a first drop in 2 months, but then let's get the next drop 2 weeks later.
I just want to highlight one problem that I really, you know, you've got your portfolio to deal with.
You're
starting to get sucked in, aren't you?
There is the risk. There's that risk, which is not necessarily a bad thing, right? If it turns out that through these conversations, it surfaces that I can provide value to helping that program deliver in a better way, then that's a big win in itself.
Yeah, but let's talk the dynamics right now at play, because someone's going to have to say, we need Colin on this project because we don't believe the firm that was brought in is actually going to be able to deliver.
Yeah, that could happen.
Yeah, but already there's the whole power dynamics that we talked about, right?
Mm, yeah.
That's a hard one to put into the open. Yeah, maybe, but not always.
Yeah, not always. And of course, there's going to be politics involved. And then there's, even if the answer is yes, and even if my boss decides to free me up to be able to do some of that, there's also, well, we just did what Colin said.
Exactly. Exactly. Fine. Yeah, exactly.
But I do think that, let's say this scenario plays out where my boss says, look, at this program matters, and I don't really want to see it go off the rails, so I want to have you oversee this consultancy. Then that changes the power dynamic.
Yes, exactly. And probably your boss is working closely with the person that brought the group in.
Right. Yeah. So I think what we've landed on is it all depends on somebody who has the accountability, caring enough, and having the courage to push back on this consultancy.
Curiosity is a word that's coming to my mind of this person as well.
Yes. Good one.
All right, look, we are at time. So what I just want to highlight is, you know, I'm just going to reiterate what Colin highlighted at the very beginning, is the complexity of digital product development is not just about a way of working. The way of working is, you know, it's difficult enough, but it is the way of working within an organization and all those organizational dynamics that are at play. Now, Colin, what we haven't touched on yet and what I'd like to take up in the next session is Colin's boss says, yes, I want you to get involved in this. I'm endowing, you know, I'm giving some authority to you now. We haven't heard, okay, so what are you going to do now? How do you get this thing on track, right?
Yeah.
We haven't got the details of that. We haven't made that tangible. And that also allows me to go back to playing that consulting firm. But
so much fun playing that role.
So I think that's worthwhile navigating as well, because that also, for the people who are listening to this podcast, you know, I'm guessing that's the thing, you know, you want. What's the, okay, yeah, Colin, so what do you do now?
Right, yeah.
Right? Colin, anything to add before we say bye-bye?
Only to say, I think this is such a useful approach to trying to really make concrete what it means to try to walk this agile path. So I think this is great. I'm really enjoying this exploration with you. Looking forward to the next session.
Same. And thank you everyone for joining us. And we're looking forward to having you join us again in the very near future. All right. Thank you.